A very good day to you wherever you are. My name's Lawrence Tratt, and this article is titled Practicing Programming, first published on April the 20th, 2022. When we see a world-class musician flawlessly play challenging music, it can be tempting to imagine that they were always able to do so. A moment's thought makes it obvious that they must have had to spend huge amounts of time practicing basic techniques in order to reach that level. What's less obvious is that they have to continue spending considerable amounts of time simply to maintain that technique, let alone expand it. In contrast, in programming, we have only a haphazard notion of how one should go about obtaining sufficient technique to become good enough to write good software. And we have almost no notion of continued practice to maintain or expand that technique. Often overtaken by life events, notably though not only the requirement to earn money to support a family, many programmers implicitly finish the bulk of their learning early on, and some stop learning entirely. As someone of rather limited talent, I have long been aware that if I'm not proactive about learning, I will fall even further behind where I would like to be. While some people enjoy practicing programming with small puzzles, the programming equivalent of musical scales perhaps, I am too grumpy to find them enlightening or enjoyable. Instead, I found that real-world tasks that require me to do something new are where I most improve and most enjoy improving my programming skills. Fortunately, and at first accidentally, I found that it's relatively easy for me to continue practicing programming on real-world tasks as part of my day-to-day life. One habit I have is to try to automate most tasks that look automatable. Especially when I was younger, people would laugh at this tendency. You've spent 4 hours to automate what you could have done in two. They were nearly always right in the short term. But what's astonishing is how often, with only minor variations, the same tasks crop up repeatedly. If that same 2 hour task crops up twice, I have broken even, and if it comes up 3 times, I've come out ahead. When I started trying to automate things, I was pretty bad at doing so. I was notably less competent than my peers. But just as a musician gains compound interest from practicing multiple hours a day, so did I. Each task I automated not only improved my basic programming technique, but also opened my eyes to new techniques and tools that might help me in future tasks. For example, a lot of the early things I automated boiled down to text processing, passing input, transforming it, and outputting it into a different form. I didn't know that there was a theory of parsing, let alone parsing tools, but gradually, I built up an understanding of reasonable ways to go about this kind of task. Something similar happened for other areas such as GUI and systems programming. Broadly speaking, in my teens and early 20s, I was often running a net loss in terms of time. I'd broken even by my mid to late 20s, and by the time I was 30, it was very clear to me that my investments had paid off. Those more talented than I would probably have reached this point well before that time, but better late than never. These days, mostly because of the time that other responsibilities require, I am more careful about which tasks I'm willing to invest time in automating. Experience has given me a better sense of what tasks are plausibly automatable and what tasks I might learn something more general from. I also have a wider palette of tools to call upon. For example, I now use clever tricks in my text editor to perform some text processing tasks that I once would have written a program for. However, if a task looks automatable, seems like it might allow me to learn something more general, and isn't covered by other tools, then I'm now more willing than I used to be to invest considerable time in it. The first time I did that was for XSMLD. I was spending a lot of time on trains and planes and reliably sending email was a problem. I then realized that this might be an opportunity to understand how to write a proper Unix daemon in C. It soon became clear to me that the major challenge in a daemon is how to keep going in the face of undesirable situations, including, but not only, outright errors. These days, XSMLD can recover from nearly anything except a lack of memory, which, given its frugality with resources, is an unlikely scenario. I had no idea how many different undesirable situations such a program could encounter, and consequently, I have learned a considerable amount from writing and maintaining XSMLD. When, more recently, I needed a way of executing commands based on actions on GitHub PRs, I felt I wouldn't learn much by writing another C daemon. Instead, I wrote Snare in Rust because I wanted to understand if Rust daemons could be as robust as their C counterparts. Broadly speaking, my conclusion was yes. I also wanted to learn about async await, a technique I'd never previously used. Snare incorporates both an HTTP server to listen to GitHub events and a job runner, which waits upon child processes collecting their stdout stdr output. I started with the HTTP server, but I found async await to be a frustrating experience. Even in a very small chunk of code, its tentacles spread more widely than I expected, and I found the resulting control flow hard to reason about. When I got to the job runner, I reverted back to traditional Unix polling. Poll is a horrible interface that's difficult to use correctly, but for me, it has the virtue that it isolates the horrors to one place. That wasn't the result from practicing that I expected, but it's useful nonetheless. When I wanted to add a newsletter subscription to my website, I was briefly tempted to use an external service before realizing that I didn't want to worry about the resulting privacy issues. Based on my Snare experience, I felt that writing a Rust daemon to handle the backend tasks of a newsletter system would be relatively easy, but I'd never written any JavaScript in a web page. Small though it was, the JavaScript that makes the subscription system more user-friendly taught me quite a bit. When I came to add a comment system to my blog, I was able to be slightly more ambitious in what I expected of JavaScript. As that last example might suggest, some of my programming practice is smaller scale, though still nearly always on real-world code. For example, sometimes I will try a new or different library to see if it helps me solve a familiar task quicker or better. Sometimes I might look at a function I've written and try to rewrite it to make it easier to understand, perhaps using a language feature I rarely use. The time I'm investing is small, and the result of such practice is much more likely to be a failure than in the bigger cases, but there are successes and, small though they are, they accumulate over time. The most noticeable change, at least to me, is that I've gradually become better at writing code that is concise while, I hope, still being relatively easy to understand. For me, at least, practicing programming is something I do frequently. Fortunately, I'm able to incorporate it into my day-to-day life, and fortunately, I enjoy the process.